Thanks a lot, Lise, for your presentation. I think we've heard some fairly diverse presentations here, but which I think still sort of links together in different ways when it comes to environmental health issues. I promised you before that that you will have a chance to ask questions and that we are now going into some discussions and debates. There are two microphones out here, so please form a line here and start to ask questions, and we'll try our best to answer them.
Hi there. Thank you all for great presentations. Merci beaucoup, Liz.
Could you please introduce yourself?
Sorry, my name is Amanda Sheedy. I'm the National Coordinator of the People's Food Policy Project. Hi, Donald. It's been a long time. Yeah. So I just wanted to ask Donald a question about land access. I think it's, you know, you talked about it in the context of the Global South and the issues that people are facing there. I think it's an issue here as well, quite frankly. But, you know, one of the new phenomena that I'm sure you just didn't get into because there wasn't adequate time is this whole issue of land grabbing that's going on. And I see that as my own personal analysis is that we're seeing a third wave of colonialism that is really kind of turning, you know, this sort of land reform movement on its head because it's just happening at such a high level. And I just heard recently that even in southern Ontario now, 80% of the land south of the 401 is now either owned by corporations or slated to be owned by corporations. Like, we are losing our access as citizens. The farmers are losing access to land and the ability to pass that on to future generations of farmers. So I'd just like to hear it's a huge, massive issue. I just wanted to throw it on the table as kind of a new trend and hear your thoughts about that.
Sure, Amanda. I quite agree with you. I put it on the sense of vulnerability, but you're absolutely right. Part of the reason for the vulnerability is there is active land grabbing, and we hear about this. I hear about it at length from my colleague Diana Lee Smith in Kenya. So we often think about that it's mostly happening somehow in the Global South, but I think you're right. And it's partly that's partly where the governance issues about and thinking about our food system and thinking about that land being an essential resource for us to be sustainable in some sense. I feel it particularly personally. My son wants to be an organic farmer and is looking for land, and he just gets enraged at the so-called green belt that's supposed to defend Toronto. And it's already, there's attacks to kind of take it up. So I think it's an ongoing struggle to recognize the value of land that can grow food and make sure that that's part of decision making. But it gets back to governance questions, and not just government, but natures of power and organization within society that... David would probably say, well, you need to get organized and, you know, and take it on, right? Yes.
I don't know if you have any comments.
Yes, perhaps add another dimension to this particular issue. I think this is an issue that will grow in importance as climate change impacts are getting more felt. And I think for some countries, because this is also taking place on a international scale and between different regions, this has become like a strategy of how to cope with some of the climate change effects. For example, some Middle Eastern countries are buying up land in Africa, for example, to ensure their food security. A country like the Maldives, which is extremely vulnerable to sea level rise, for example. They are now considering to buy land in India. So if the Maldives gets flooded, I mean, they cannot live there anymore. So where should they go? So it's part of something bigger, actually, and how to cope with these changes in society. Please.
It's related aspect related to land, which I want to share a little bit of my experience. And this came into mind because I think Mr. Cole mentioned that it was important to have deeds and titles of properties. And I'm not exactly convinced that's the case, at least in all circumstances. In the 1960s and 1970s, I'm talking about experience that happened in Central America and Honduras, the government went and made huge investments, millions and millions of dollars, to develop areas, you know, for people, farmers, to have access to land, which they did. And they made huge co-ops and communal farming, and it was success. It was a tremendous success in terms of food production. But then the governance model changed in 70s and 80s, stimulated by new criteria, which were being, you know, stimulated by, let's say, like the World Bank, the International Bank of Development, which were talking about the importance of privatizing land. So what happened is that eventually these people got the land on the individual terms, individual property, and they finished trying to access credit, getting the land on the individual basis. They mortgaged their land, and eventually most of them lost it to the bank because they simply could not pay very harsh interests and low terms. And you know how farming is. It depends too much on seasonal fluctuations, rain, and so forth. So it turns out the government, after huge investment and getting in depth with international organizations, they developed regions which previously were undeveloped, and they initially handed over this to thousands and thousands of farmers, but this was lost. And they eventually were bought by corporations. So the whole project, which was basically established for the purpose of food security, was failed. And this is a process that started in the 1960s and 1970s because of global governance issues, thought that was the way. So they experimented with the people. Now we are talking 2011, and this is already 30, 40 years in that trend. It's going to take a lot of time to reverse it. So basically my concept is that I think we should encourage maybe cooperative ownership of the land, communal ownership of the land as a means to keep security for food. And in fact, those farmers and co-ops which did maintain their land are now about the most successful models of food security and entrepreneurship, at least in the Central American area. That's my comment. You know. Thank you.
I'm tempted to suggest that we need watchdogs in putting some initiatives like the one you describe, or any kind of initiatives. Somewhere, some organizations should play that role of watching what's going on, so that when we see a decline in initiatives, well, someone rings the bell and shows what are the convenience and the impact of on depopulation health. We try to do that in Montreal, to be this kind of watchdog, but it's... We have to be strong and very present, and this is a lack I see in policies very often.
Donald, do you want to respond? Just a short response. I think for me it's critical with the sort of land security or secure tenure of land, and then the actual ownership. I mean, that could take different types of ownership modalities. But again, I think it's for individual farmers, for example, to make investments into increasing the food production. It is critical to have some type of secure tenure. And sort of private land may not always be the answer, I think. For many farmers, it's very difficult to get a title deed, for example. They may have to travel for many, many days just to get into the capital and get this title deed. So it's not about the type of ownership as such, but perhaps more about knowing that I have secured tenure of this land over a certain period of time. Yes?
Yeah, Jim Chauvin from the Canadian Public Health Association. I'm going to suggest a very perhaps stupid idea, but we're talking about social innovation here as well. Lise, you were mentioning that men in Montreal from your latest survey seem all of a sudden to be consuming more veggies and fruits, which is a wonderful thing, and I'm certainly one of those males. So I'm wondering if there's a role that we can suggest to certain men. And Don, I'm going to take the Toronto example. I was in Toronto recently for a conference at the Monk Center on non-communicable diseases, and I was walking up from the Island Airport, Toronto Island Airport, up University Avenue, and it struck me. I was looking around and thinking, men do have a phallic fixation, and there were many buildings bearing men's names, and many of them are health centers, like the Peter Monk Center and the Israel Herzog Center for this and the so-and-so center for that. Men like to build things that they can show that, you know, my building's bigger than yours. And I was just thinking, we've got a situation where we're talking about the concept of, you know, farmland accessible to urban centers. And actually, if one goes back, I've just finished a study of my own genealogy here in Quebec. And one of the things that fascinated me was looking at the history of Montreal, and urban farms existed in the city. And can we bring that back somehow? And I'm thinking, is there a way of convincing these males that like to give money for certain disease-related buildings to put it towards health-related initiatives of building urban farming? And could we have the Peter Monk urban farm system in Toronto? Wouldn't that be much more pro-health than pro-disease? And, you know, or disease-focused at least, not necessarily pro-disease. And I'm thinking, is there some way through a social innovation program that we can get across to these males with money, the Gates, the Bloombergs, elsewhere, to actually invest in programs that promote health by bringing good nutrition, good policies, pro-health policies, back into urban centers? So I'm throwing it out as a crazy idea, but it was just, I started reflecting on it as you were making your presentations. Thank you.
It's not crazy. It's going on in some cities. For example, well, here there are, you know, people who just take a land without any permission.
Land grabbing.
Okay.
Oh, well, it depends whether you take it or whether you just use it. If you use it, you're a squatter. If you take it, you're a grabber.
Well, here in a small community in Montreal, people have been using a small part of land for so long that no one will touch them and they will keep it. And I think that we have to support that kind of, well, not everywhere, of course, but we can demonstrate by supporting some kinds of initiatives that people can do something well and good with land if you give it to them. They will know how to use it. And what I like very much is this initiative in New York City that is quite recent, where private people just borrow their backyard to some people who want to cultivate it. And I think this is really something that we should support. And this doesn't have to be supported by a big government program, not at all. It doesn't cost anything. And we should applaud those kind of initiatives. And also, we have this Lufa Farm, which is a very large private commercial farm, which has just started its production this month. This is a serre.
Greenhouse.
Greenhouse on the roof of a large private building here in Montreal, and this was completely achieved by private people. They will make money, they say, in 3 years, but they accept to share the production first with local community small markets. This is what they aim at providing for Montreal people. We have to applaud that. And again, this doesn't have to do with any public program. This is what I like, because this is going on to be viable on a long-term basis. Sometimes this is what I'm always afraid with our public health program. They just stop, and then everything goes down. We have to start again. And this is such a bad way of funding.
Okay, thanks a lot. We have to close there. And I think we should give our presenters a big round of applause. There will be lunch served outside here. And I was asked to say that you should take your lunch and then bring it into sort of a lunch area where you can eat it. And yes, lunch will be apple today, so that's clear. I see there is one lunch there already on the table, a green apple. So many thanks again. Thanks.
We always